Okay, we're beginning here at the bottom of Samach Amud Bet with the statement in the Mishnah, which says, "Lo biyachid bizman she'en biraglo makah." So a person can't go out with one shoe on his foot in an instance where he doesn't have an injury on the foot. We said before in the Mishnah that Yerushalmi says that the focus here is the chashash that he might be carrying the other shoe, as the Bavli seems to be more focused on the fact that people are going to make fun of him, and in making fun of him, he's going to remove the shoe or the one shoe that he has on. Obviously, the diuk at the top of Samach Aleph is Hayviyesh Raglo Makah Nafik. If he does have an injury on his foot, he is allowed to go out with one shoe on. V'hai Minayu Nafik. Which foot has the shoe on it? One leg or one foot has the injury, the other one does not. On which does he wear the shoe? So Amar Rav Huna, Ba'oto She'esh Ba'Makah. Rav Huna says that the shoe is protective, therefore he's going to wear it on the foot that has the injury. Alma, Kasara Sandal Shum Tzara Avid. Purpose of the shoe, the sandal, is to protect against injury, pain, something that is difficult for you to walk on. He would otherwise walk barefoot, he'd walk on the ground. Here, because of the injury, he needs the shoe to protect that foot. On the one that does not have the injury on it. The reason one wears a shoe is for the pleasure of having those shoes on. The feet feel better, but the one that has the injury on it, he can't put a shoe on because of the injury. It's making it difficult for him to walk on there. And the one that has the injury on it proves it. And Rabbi Yochanan also subscribes to the position of Rav Huna, which is that you place the shoe ba'oto she'esh ba makah. Damalei Rabbi Yochanan, the Rabbi Shemin bar Abba, havli masanai, pass me my shoes. Yaivlei diyamin, pass him his right shoe. Amalei asito makah, says, now you've made my foot into a makah. The assumption being here that he would have placed on, in terms of the order of his shoes, that when you put on your shoes, you put on the left one first, and then the right shoe. So the fact that he handed him his right shoe means that he already skipped the left shoe that should have been the first shoe, and now he's handing him his right shoe. So he says, Asito makah, you made it as if I have an injury on my foot. He says, so I'm going to go out now with one shoe on. But the way it's phrased now, the Gemara is assuming that means that he thinks that he's putting it on the foot that has the injury on it. He skipped the left foot, handed him his right shoe. Now he's only going to put on the right shoe, assuming that that's where the makah, where the injury is. Gemara says, wait a minute, V'dilma kichia barav sfirle. Maybe he holds like chir barav, v'hochi gamar, asit shel small makah. Now you made my left one into an injury now. And the fact that you handed me my right shoe, I should have put the left one on first, but you didn't hand me that because there's an injury on my left side. So now you handed me my right shoe to put on the foot that doesn't have the injury. So it's very difficult to make a deal from his statement about which foot was injured. But as Rabbi Yochanan Tameh, Rabbi Yochanan is based on his own position other places, which is, Dam Rabbi Yochanan, Kitfilin kach minalim. Like tfilin is how you put your shoes on. Ma tfilin bismol, just like you put on your tfilin on your left arm. Af minalin bismol, so too by shoes, you put shoes on your left foot first, and then your right foot. Meitavei, is that really true? We have a braita that says, Kishu no el sheyamin v'charkach no el shel smol. When he puts on his shoes, he puts on the right one first, and then he puts on the left one. Am Rav Yosef, hashta detanya hochi. Now that we have the braita that says right first, Am Rav Yochanan hochi, and Rav Yochanan says put on the left first, the ovid hochi ovid, or the ovid hochi ovid. You can do either one, it sounds like. Now it's interesting here, Tosafot, in explaining this, the ovid hochi, has an interesting approach to this. He says, Perish the Braita lo pliga Rabbi Yochanan, that they don't argue on each other. It's just a question of what you focus on. Sometimes the right is more important. Sometimes the left is more important. If you're looking at tefillin, then the left is the more important arm, because that's the arm that the tefillin go on. If you're looking at things like boin yado, boin raglo, that goes to the right hand. So each one of them has a basis for saying that left should go first and right should go first. And then the suggestion, or what it looks like here, is you could do whatever you want. Tosafot says, no, you cannot do whatever you want. But near the reed, dachi perusho, david ochi ovid, mishirotze lechabev shel smol. If you want to choose to use the left all the time, fine. You want to choose to use the right all the time, fine, you have support for both positions. But what we don't want you to do is switching back and forth. This has implications for another halacha where the Gemara has the same psak halacha. Tosafot doesn't mention it here, but the Gemara in Brachot says, regards to the machloka between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, where what time is Mincha end and Mariv begins. Rabbi Yehuda says, plaga Mincha. Chamim say Erev Shkia, or Tzeit HaKochavim, depending on which of the poskim. But the Gemara has no conclusion to that. The Gemara says, since Deloit Mer Hilchot HaKamar, Deloit Mer Hilchot HaKamar, since the halacha is not stated like the Chachamim or like Rabbi Yehuda, David Mar Avid, David Mar Avid. If you do like Rabbi Yehuda, you're fine. If you do like the Chachamim, you're fine. So you could read that one of two ways. You could read that every day you can do. Either like the Chachamim or Rabbi Yehuda. As long as in one day you're not inconsistent, as long as you're consistent to make Mincha before Plag HaMincha and Marv after Plag HaMincha, you can do it that day. The next day, you can do Mincha after Plag HaMincha, before Shkia, and then you David Marv after Shkia, fine. You can switch back and forth between the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Most of the Boskim believe that you have to maintain a steady position, that you can either always paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, or always paskin like the Chachamim. Tosafot seems, or the Ri here seems to support that position. When the Gemara says here, David Hachi Ovid, David Hachi Ovid, it's not saying do as you please, it's saying you can choose. There's equal basis for choosing each one of these halachic lines, and therefore you can make a choice about which one you pick. But once you've picked, you have to remain consistent in that line. And so that's the important, maybe, corollary from this Tosafot, is about the Gemara of Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanon, is that you shouldn't be inconsistent. Now there, again, the Mishonim argue, some of the Mishonim believe you have to pick once in your life, and that's it. You can't change it. Others believe that you have to be consistent over a period of time. If every once in a while, it's fine. Others believe that you could switch every day. So there is a range of the Mishonim there. Tosafot here clearly believes that it's a choice that has long-ranging implications. Now, the Gemara continues. Amar Leah Abaye, Dilma, Rabbi Yochanan, Hamatznita lo Avishmile. Abaye says back to Rabbi Yosef, I don't understand why you think that Rabbi Yochanan must have known about this Braita, and therefore you have equal options in picking Rabbi Yochanan Shita versus the Braita Shita. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan never heard of the Braita, which is possible. Again, Amoraim assumed to know all the Mishnayot, not necessarily all the Braitot. If you have a Shmile, have a Hadarbe. Had he heard the Braita, maybe he would have reversed his position. Vina Mishmile, Kasavein Alacha Koto Mishnah. Or the other way around. He might have heard it and thought that the Allah is not like it. How do you know that Rabbi Yochanan is able to reconcile with this Braita and say, do as you please? Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Yirei Shemayim, Yotzei Yidei Shteyem. Person who is fear of heaven and wants to be Yotzei Kol HaDeot will do this. Umanu Marbe Ravana. He will do like Marbe de Ravana, which is Echiyavit. Sayim Di Amine Velokater. He put on his right shoe first, but did not tie it. Sayim Di Smale, put on his left shoe, Vikatar. And then he tied it. Vahadar Kater Di Amine. And then he went back, and he tied the right shoe. The idea being that when it comes to the choice between right and left, we're gonna opt towards the right first. Over here, Tefillin is the guy that says that you should give precedence to the left side. Tefillin is about tying. It's Ukshartem, tying it on your arm. So the tying that you do with the tefillin is on your left arm. So what you're going to do is you're going to put the right shoe on first, then the left shoe, tie the left shoe, because that gives precedence to the tefillin side of the tying, and then you'll tie the right shoe afterwards. Amar Rav Ashi, Chazina Rav Gana to look up it. Azla Rav Gana was not makbid on this at all. Tan Rabbanan, we have another Braito, Tosefta, Kishu Noel, Noel Shel Yamin, Barachakach Noel Shel Smol. Kishu Choletz, Choletz Shel Smol, Barachakach Choletz Shel Yamin. Here, when we give precedence to the right, that means when you're putting them on, you put the right shoe first, left shoe afterwards. But when you are removing your shoes, you don't take off the right shoe first, then the left shoe, but rather the opposite. You take off the left shoe, and then take off the right shoe, again, giving precedence to the right shoe, leaving the shoe on the right side. When a person bathes themselves, a person bathes themselves or wash their hands, they should wash their right hand first, and then wash their left hand. And when he anoints himself, puts oil on, puts on cream, he should put on the right side first, and then the left side. A person wants to bathe his whole body or put on lotion on his whole body. First should do with his head. Because that's the king of the body, is the head. Also, for hygienic purposes, it would be good to wash the head first and then the body afterwards, so that everything washes downward. Aside from that, there's a reason in terms of halach or p'tusha that you give precedence to the rosh. And the reason for all this is to give religious perspective to even the mundane activities. And that's really to show that God is involved in every aspect of our lives. Again, whether you have to or don't have to tie your shoes or do it this way, it's probably not relevant. The idea is that we should enter a religious perspective and view into our mundane activities so that we see God in everything that we do. Ah, very good. So what happens when you're a lefty? So that's a very good question. What do lefties do? Now the Gemara has an interesting approach with regards to lefties. The Gemara in general says that for a lefty, his left hand is ki yamin shelo. It's like his right hand. But that only relates to issues where you are reflecting something that the person himself does. On the other hand, if we're asking what a general principle, and we're saying, do I give precedence to the right or do I give precedence to the left? And I look at, in general, right supersedes left, that a lefty will be guided by that as well. So in this instance, the braita that says you put on your right shoe, then your left shoe, is not saying that's because righty versus lefty. That's just saying that, in general, we look at the right and give right precedence over left. Irrespective of lefty-righty, it's just in general, right goes before left. On the other hand, in terms of tying the shoes, there is clearly guided by the tefillin. Rabbi Yochanan's statement that tefillin guided. And therefore, a righty would tie his left shoe first because he ties his tefillin on his left arm. A lefty would not do that because a lefty has tefillin on the right arm and he ties them on the right arm. Therefore, the halacha is brought down for a lefty. He will put on his right shoe first, then his left shoe. Tie his right shoe, tie his left shoe. So again, the placement of the shoe is guided by the general public. What gets precedence? Right over left. Shoes go on for everybody. That's lefty and righty going the right foot first and then the left foot. On the other hand, when it comes to the tying of the shoes, the lefty will flip it. He will do the tying of the right shoe first, then the left shoe because he puts his tefillin on his right arm. And then the righty we'll do it the other way around, which is he'll tie his left shoe first and then his right shoe. It's possible for a lefty, he could put on his right shoe and tie his right shoe and then put on the left shoe and tie the left shoe as well. It would have the same effect. I think just the low plug is that we put on the shoes first and then tie them. Another example of that is with regards to when a person goes around the mizbeach or when a person on a Friday night says, L'chadodi and boi b'shalom, they turn. So they turn around to face the other side. You're supposed to turn to your right side when you go around. Lefties don't turn to the left side and turn around the opposite way. Lefties don't do the opposite in that case because that's not governed by lefty-righty. That's governed by a more general global view of which side do we give precedence to. So it's always important to determine. Same thing with lighting the menorah. Or Chanukiah, it's coming up the halacha. We start from the candles, put them on the right side, and then you light the leftmost candle, but you start the candles moving from the right side. The candles are set up from right to left, and then you light the leftmost candle moving to the right side. So over here, again, the lefty's not going to put all his candles starting from the left side, and then light the rightmost candle. He's going to do it the same way everybody else does it, because here it's governed by a global view that we always put on the right first, and then move to the left. So here the thing, again, the lefty's not going to light and set up his candles the opposite way, because it's governed by a global view of what's precedence, right and left. The only thing one will change is things where din is specifically about your right hand, like picking up the kos shel bracha, right, he picks up in his right hand, the lefty will pick it up in his left hand. One of the areas where you have a machloket is, for instance, by lulav and etrog, machloket shulchan aruch and the ramah, they're what's governing. When you pick up the lulav in the right hand and the etrog in the left hand, is that because it's the right hand, and then you pick up the majority of your mitzvot in your right hand, and the minority, the etrog in the left hand? Or is it because right always gets precedence? It's a global view of right always. And that makes a difference for a lefty. The Shulchan Aruch says a lefty should take a lulav in his right hand, just like everybody else. The Ramah says no, that a lefty could switch and should take the lulav in his left hand because it's governed here by the arm. It's your stronger arm that you're taking. That's giving precedence. It's not a global view of lulav and etrog according to the Ramah. So you should know that whenever these things come up, you have to be careful about why it's being guided by the right hand. Here's a great example where the halacha bifurcates and says that one of them will be governed, lefty will change, and the other aspect will not change when it comes to a lefty. Right now, lo bit tefillin. Person may not go out with tefillin. Amar Rav Safar lo teima liba demand amar. This is not only according to one who says Shabbat lav zman tefillin. Who? Obviously, if you're not supposed to wear tefillin on Shabbat, you shouldn't go out with tefillin on Shabbat. But ela filu man damar Shabbat zman tefillin. Even according to the one who says that Shabbat is man tefillin, lo yitzei, a person may not go out to the Rishut HaRabim. Dilma atele tuye b'rishut rabim, because you may come to carry it, dalet amot b'rishut rabim. Now, Tosafot had a different gerson in the Gemara. You can see in the Tosafot, just in Divrei HaMatchil, it says, Dilma mifsakei v'atele chzine l'achvinu dalet amot b'rishut rabim. So Tosafot had a gerson that maybe they will snap, that the ritzuot will break, and then I'll have to carry it, dalet amot b'rishut rabim. It's clear that Rashi did not have this girsa, because Rashi says, what's the reason you're going to have to take off the tefillin in b'rishut rabim? Not because they broke the ritzuot, because dilma shakelahu mireshim balifanot. If he goes to the restroom, he goes to the bathroom, he's going to have to remove his tefillin. So when he removes his tefillin to go to the bathroom, he might come to carry them. Dalet amot b'shut rabim. It's clear that Rashi did not have that girsa. Tosfot brings that v'kodesh mikurbil omer degarsin and la shapir. It says leave the girsa in of mifsake. V'itzderecha time of the mifsakul the tefillin shel yad. You need that for tefillin shel yad. The interich lachlotz. They don't have to take them off. K'satarich lebeit hakisel shel rosh mishum shin. This is Tosfot the shita to. We're going to see it again at the end of today's daf. Rashi and Tosfot have this machloket throughout Shas. We actually saw it back on Chaf Chedem with Bet. Starting in the Gemara in Brachot, also appears in the Gemara in Minachot. Tosfot has a suffix over there in Minachot Lamed Hey about this issue. When a person enters into the restroom, does he have to remove his tefillin shel yad? Is it only his tefillin shel rosh that he has to remove, or also the tefillin shel yad? Here you see the Kodesh Mekubil says you only have to remove the tefillin shel rosh because the tefillin shel rosh have a shin on the outside. So they have ktav kodesh on the outside, and because of that, you must remove the tefillin shel rosh. Tefillin shel yad, you do not have to remove because they're mechupe be'or. They're covered. The parshiot are inside, and now you have leather on the outside that's protecting them, and therefore you can enter into the bathroom with the tefillin shel yad on. That's because Tosavot believes, as far as the Ritzuot are concerned, the Ritzuot have no kedusha of ketav on them, and therefore the Ritzuot and the tefillin shel yad can go into the bathroom with, whereas the tefillin shel rosh you must remove because of the shin on the outside. Rashi, on the other hand, believes that even by tefillin shel yad, you have an issue because Rashi says, "Kshem Hashem nikra alecho," that it says that the name of God is upon you. Tosafot says, what does it mean, "Kshem Hashem nikra alecho"? Well, tefillin shel rosh, which is up high and exposed, when people see them, then they'll see that you're the representative of God. That's how we know that Kshem Hashem is on you. Rashi brings what we all know, "Kshem Hashem nikra alecho," is because the Kshem Hashem is spelled out on the tefillin, which is the Kshem of Shin. Dalet and Yud is spelled out. You have the Shin on the tefillin shel rosh. You have the Dalet, which is the knot behind the tefillin shel rosh, the kesher shel rosh, and the yod on the tefillin shel yad. And therefore you have the shem Hashem that's spelled out, and that's kishem Hashem nikra lecha, meaning that both for tefillin shel rosh and tefillin shel yad, the yod of the tefillin shel yad is part of the shem Hashem. Therefore, according to Rashi, it would supposedly it would have some sort of kedusha to it. And according to Rashi, it would then have to remove the tefillin shel yad as well when you enter into the restrooms. So here, this is Tosfot l'shita to, and that's why he says, maybe over here you need mifsakeh for tefillin shel yad, because tefillin shel yad you wouldn't have to remove to go into the bathroom. As Rashi, again, would disagree with that, and we'll see at the end of today's daf, this will come up again. Where it says, v'ikad amad ilo ha-seifa, some say it the other way around, v'imyatza enu chayav chatat. If a person went out with the tefillin on, he's not chayav chatat. Am Rav Safa lo teim alib demand amar Shabbat zman tefillin. Not only according to the one who says that Shabbat is zman tefillin, do we say that it's not a problem of carrying on Shabbat because you're wearing the tefillin like you're supposed to? Even according to one who says Shabbat is not the time for tefillin, you're not chayav chatat, my time, derech malbush avido. It's like wearing clothing. Tefillin are a type of adornment. They're a type of clothing that a person wear, a malbush of an individual. And therefore, even when he goes out on Shabbat, when it's not zman tefillin, they're still, even though it's not zman tefillin, he's still classified as a malbush, as wearing clothing. It's as if he put on his shirt. It's as if he put on a hat. That's the same way when he puts on tefillin. This has a big nafkamina for a sugi at the end of Eruvin, which is, if a person finds tefillin out in the field, how does he bring them in? Even though it's lavzman tefillin, he can put them on, he can wear them, because they are a malbush. It's also brought up in the Targum, with regards to the restriction against an isha. It says, but lo tobash kever simlat isha. Man may not wear women's clothing, and a woman may not wear man's clothing. Over there, the Targum Yonatan says, what is man's clothing? Tzitzit and tefillin. That's what the Targum Yonatan says over there. It's part of men's wear. It's part of what a man would wear, and therefore there's a restriction against a woman wearing it. Not from a halachic standpoint of tefillin and talit, but a standpoint of she may not wear men's clothing. It's a restriction min Torah. And that you see again, it's a malbush. It's considered to be a clothing or the adornment of the individual. Okay, now we move to the amulets, which is going to take up most of the rest of the daf, which is, now I'm allowed to wear an amulet when it's not written by an expert. Amra papa, lo tema ad de mumche gavra, o mumche kmiya, don't say that you need here for the individual to be an expert, as well as the amulet, the cloth that's written over there to be efficacious. Ella, kevin de mumcha gavra. As long as the individual himself is classified as an expert. Alpha gavlo de mumcha gmiya. We have no precedence for this gmiya, this amulet to work. That is fine. So the only requirement from the Mishnah is that the one who's writing it be an expert. The one who's providing it is the expert. not that the actual cloth or incantation, we don't have to have precedent that it worked before. Here is a classification that this individual is a mumcha, even though the text that he's writing now was not verified, tested before. That's what the Gemara says here. And the Gemara says, Dekanami, I can prove that to you from the Mishnah. You can infer that from the Mishnah. Tani, v'lo bikmiya she'eno min ha-mumcha. That doesn't come from the expert. When it comes mina mumcha, that's talking about an individual, from the individual who is an expert. But if you wanted to speak about May itself, it was talking about zman she'enu mumcha, that it's not verified, it's not expertized. It hasn't been checked out before. And the Tosafot suggests that lashon would have been both. It would have included both the kmeya and the individual himself. The way we have it written in our Mishnah, it sounds like the only expertise we need is the individual who is writing the klaf. Now the Gemara is going to discuss, how do you become an expert? Tanrabanan. Ezo kmeya mumcha. What is considered to be a kmeya that is efficacious, that has already a stamp of approval? Choshvipe vishana vishilesh. Something that worked once, twice, three times. So again, throughout this daf, we're going to assume that you need three times to have a chazaka. So anything that happens three times establishes something as being efficacious or expert. Echad kmeya shel ktav, ve'echad kmeya shel ikarim. Now, here, Rashi points this out, that the word kmeya itself, we're used to using kmeya to mean amulet, but amulet in the sense that you have a written cloth that has some sort of incantation on it. The word kmeya, as Rashi says, means kesher. Kesher means some sort of holder, some sort of encasement, the same way that the word amulet means an encasement of some sort holding something. The charm that is inside, or whatever is inside of there, is not defined. It's simply, amulet has something in it that supposedly has powers. Same thing here with the kmeya. Kmeya has something in there that supposedly is efficacious. So therefore here, the term is, echad kmeya shel ikarim and echad kmeya shel ktav. Doesn't matter if the kmeya is holding an incantation in it, a cloth in it, or if it's holding some sort of incense or spices that also have that same impact. Echad cholesh yesh bo sakana, echad cholesh yesh bo sakana. Doesn't matter whether the sick individual here is deathly ill or is just ill. Either way, you're allowed to wear this. Velo shenichpe, ela shlo yichpe. This is a very important statement. It's not because a person had a sickness, therefore he can wear the amulet. So someone had epilepsy. He had an epilepsy seizure, and then now he's allowed to wear the amulet to stop it from happening in the future. That's not true. A person can wear it even to prevent epilepsy or prevent the sickness from coming upon him. It doesn't mean that he has to have had the sickness or been sick once, and then now it's preventative. It can be even, never had the issue, and he's being proactive and being preventative and putting this on. Rashi says something that's very interesting that you don't have to say in the Gemara, which is Rashi, the last Rashi on the Amud says, Shba mishpachat nichpim b'doeg shle ichpe. He has to have some sort of family history, that he has a predisposition to this from his family's medical history. And therefore he wears it. You didn't have to say that. You could have just said that a person's afraid of some sickness, he can wear it. Rashi says that there has to be a reason or a reason for suspicion that you're going to get this. First, all the neighbors have something that's contagious. Maybe there it's okay to wear it. But you have to have a reason to believe that you are at risk of getting this issue or having this issue before you can wear it. Can't simply put it on because you just want to be safe. Rashi terms it that there has to be some suspicion, some risk here. If a kosher matir, person can tie it and untie it, a filu b'shut harabim, even out in the public domain, as long as he doesn't tie it b'shir or b'tabat, as long as he doesn't put it on with a chain or a bracelet or a ring, we would say bo reshut harabim and then go out into the public domain mishum marat ayin, because of marat ayin. Now marat ayin has two tzadim to it. Marat ayin can be a problem because we're afraid if you do such a thing, other people are going to be choshed that you are doing the wrong thing. That we don't allow you to do this because ve'itim nikiyim minei Hashem u'minei Yisrael. You have to have clean hands, both with regards to Hashem, but even with regards to other people. Other people shouldn't suspect that you're doing something wrong. Right, we had that by Bishul on Shabbat. That's Mechzeke Bishul. That you shouldn't do things that look like cooking on Shabbat, because other people see you and think you're cooking on Shabbat. You know you're not cooking, but the problem is that other people see you. There's also a different aspect of Marat Ayin, which is that we're afraid of what the conclusion of the people who see you will be. Not because they're going to think you're doing something wrong, but you're going to set a precedent by which they're going to now do something. So the Marat Ayin is that they'll see you do this, and then they'll assume that you're allowed to do these things. So over here, the Marat Ayin is clearly, they're not worried about you doing something wrong. The problem is that they're going to learn from you and do this. Otherwise, what's that? As you see in Rashi, if you wear it on a bracelet, or you wear it with a ring, then what are people going to assume? This is command the bayle the refuah el tachshit. Looks like you're wearing it as an adornment, not for its medical efficacy. V'lav tachshitu el machma dagat choli. Rashi says that the reason you're allowed to wear this is because it's for medicinal reasons and for its medical efficacy, and not because it's a piece of jewelry. What is the person who sees it tied to a bracelet, tied to a ring, going to think? It's a nice piece of jewelry. I can wear it as jewelry as well, even though they don't have the medical reason to wear it. So our maradayin here is we're afraid of what people are going to learn from you wearing it this way. So inherently, there's nothing wrong with wearing it this way. If it works, and that's the way it's going to work, that's fine. Our problem is other people are going to see you wearing this way, and they'll come to the wrong conclusion. The wrong conclusion being, they're going to think that this as an ornament, as decorative, as jewelry is fine, and that we don't want. So therefore, you can't go out within that way. Now the Gemara says, "Vatanya, ezu kamiya mumche." What is an expert's amulet? Kol shiripe gimu bnei adam keechad. Anything that cured three different people. Keechad is probably unnecessary here. Rashi didn't necessarily have the word echad in it. Tosafot does have the girsa of keechad, but the Ri says gersinan keechad, even though it's not necessary. He says it's lav dafka. Doesn't mean I have to have simultaneously, but they were successful at curing three people. So here you had a requirement of three people in order to be a kameya. And the previous time it said that as long as they did it three times, even badam echad, even with one person, that was conceived to be a kameya mumcha. Gemara says, lo kasha, that's not a problem. I'm mumchuya gavra, I'm mumchuya kameya. Depends what you're trying to create, they give expertise to. Is the expertise with the individual or the expertise in the kameya itself? That's what as Rashi explains here. If it comes to stam gebilmu bnei adam, here we're talking about three different people, assumption is that they have three different sicknesses. No individual has the same sickness. And therefore, we're talking about three different people with three sicknesses. And therefore, you're going to require three different amulets over here. And they're not similar to each other. So over here, you have three individuals who have a solution to their sickness from three different amulets. So I can't prove anything about amulets over here. Each amulet was only used one time. So the amulets themselves, we don't know anything about them. They worked once. There's nothing to set a precedent with. On the other hand, the quote-unquote doctor over here, or the person who provided the ambulance, cured three people. And in curing three people, he's now established his credentials of curing three individuals. That means that he's an expert. He's an expert now to write ambulance in general. Rashi has an interesting way of dealing with it here. Rashi says that the individual, if he wrote three different ambulance for these three individuals, then he's an expert for all ambulance. Because we see now, it has nothing to do with the chole or the kameya, it has to do with the fact that this person is an expert. He's an expert, he was able to write three different incantations and solve the problems of each of these individuals. He's an expert for all kameya. On the other hand, if this individual wrote the same kameya, the same amulet for three different people, and it solved their problems. So then Rashi says he is an expert for that kameya, and that kameya itself is also established as a precedent. So that's the important thing here is, we're establishing expertise, but what expertise are you establishing? Depends on what he did. If he used three different amulets, then we know he's an expert because he's across the board. He's got a wide range, and he solved three problems. But then if he used the same amulet, then he's good for that amulet. For that sickness and that amulet, it works for him, and that's what he's allowed to use, and that's what he becomes an expert for. All right, then the other braita, which said, Ripe, Pam, Shana, Vishilesh, happened three times, is talking about the amulet itself. Here you have an incantation that works three times. So an amulet that works three times, whether it's, we'll see on one person, whether it's on multiple people, then it establishes the veracity of the amulet, because now the amulet worked three different times. Nothing to do with the doctor necessarily, nothing to do with the expert. But the fact that this amulet worked three times shows you that this amulet is good to use. And therefore that's the establishing the credentials of the amulet. So the Gemara distinguishes between the Braita saying, what are we trying to establish credentials for? If you're trying to establish credentials of the amulet, that's the first Braita that we said one, two, three times. The Braita that we brought over here, which talks about three different people, is trying to establish the credentials of the doctor, the writer of the amulets. So now we have Rapapa. Rapapa is interesting. Our Rapapa, the Pshitali. It's clear to me, Tzlat Kameya, the Tzlat Gavre, Tzlat Tzlat Zimne. If you have three different amulets, they went to three different people. And those amulets cured three times. And here Rashi says, and the Ri both say that that's even if it's the same person three times, even if that one of those three individuals was cured three times by that one amulet, then what we have here is Tmache Gavra Vitmache Kmeya. The individual is established as an expert, and so are the amulets over here. The individual is established as an expert. He just cured three different people with three different amulets. So he's clearly, he's got the goods. He knows how to do this, and he can do it multiple. He's doing it with different types of amulets. He's basically given a stamp of approval to do anything. The Kameo to work three times. So they have established, again, for themselves credentials, because they work three times. So these amulets are also efficacious, and therefore they are established to be good amulets that other people can write, according to Rashi. Not this individual. Other people can write these amulets because they're known to work. And therefore, these amulets can be used by anybody and written by anybody. Then, the next case. Tzlata kameya, letate gavre. Three different amulets to three different people. Chad chad zimna. But they only cured one time each. Then, gavre itmache, kameya lo itmache. Over there, the credentials of expertise are given to the individual. He cured three people with three different amulets. He's established his credentials. On the other hand, for the kameya themselves, each kameya, each amulet has only cured once. Curing once, it hasn't established a precedence. So Rashi says, therefore, nobody else can write this amulet or use this amulet until it's established three times that this type of incantation or ikarim or incense will work. The third case here is chad kameya letzlate gavre. One amulet to three different individuals. Kameya itmache, gavra lo itmache. So here you have this one kameya to three different people. Then the kameya has established its credentials because now it's worked three times. And working three times, it set up its credentials and therefore it's considered to be efficacious and anybody can write it. On the other hand, gavra lo itmache. The gavra himself has then established his credentials. Yes, he cured three people, but he cured three people with the same kameya. So we could assign the reason for the solution here to the kameya and not to the individual. It's not necessarily the doctor that did it. It's clear that the incantation works because they worked with three different people. We're not sure if the doctor is, whether he is an expert or not, because he hasn't shown us he's not a one-trick pony. So that's what we want to establish here, that he's not. And therefore, the gavra is not established as an expert over here. Now, bayro papa. The question happens is, tlata kmiya lechad gavra. What happens if you have three different amulets that are given to one individual? So what do we establish expertise for here? Clearly, for the amulets, we have no expertise established. Each one of them only worked one time. So that you can't establish. The question is for the doctor. Has he established his expertise now by doing three different amulets? And therefore, he's now shown that he's got a large hand to play. But on the other hand, maybe not. Why? Because he only cured one individual. And that's what the Gemara asks here. Kmeya vade lo itmache. We know for sure that the amulets do not establish expertise credentials. Gavra itmache. But the individual did. Alo itmache. Maybe not. Mi amrinan ha asile. Maybe you say he did. Look, he cured him three different times. Odilma mazla da hagavra hu deka mekabel katva. Maybe it is the mazel of the sick person that works with amulets, that he has a predisposition to amulets that work, or he has some sort of connection where his mazel allows amulets to take effect. And therefore, this expert here has not established credentials because he may have been lucky. He just landed on the right guy who amulets work for. And therefore, we do not establish credentials. Take with the Gemara leaves this as unresolved. And Rashi says over here, it's very interesting, Rashi says, Malacho shel choli zeh. When he says, Mazle da'agavra, he says the mazle is the malach of this sickness. I would have said it that it has to do with this individual, that it's this individual's mazal. Rashi calls it the Malacho shel choli zeh. So Rashi, it's interesting that he says it that way, because he still then should be establishing credentials, because he's now found three different malachim that are willing to accept the amulets. So I'm just pointing it out. I would have read it, and the simple way to read the Gemara is that it's the mazel of this individual, which is affected by amulets. The fact that Rashi has the word choli is very interesting. Again, maybe you could read it the other way, I think, but the simple reading of Rashi is not that way. So Rashi also asks a question. How come we don't know the answer from before? Because it says, that over there it says, he did 1, 2, 3 times, the mashmala adam echad. Rashi already said before, that could be one person or three people. It doesn't, when we establish the expertise over there, over there we said, when it happened three people to one person, we don't say that it's got to do with the mazel of the individual. We say that it has to do with the efficacy of the kameya. The fact that this kameya worked three times, even with one person, we say this amulet gets stamp of approval. How come we don't over there say, oh, maybe it's the mazel of this individual, it's not the kameya? So Rashi says, lo dummy, hotam chad kameya hu. Why would you go to the mazel of the individual when you see that the incantation has worked every time? Over here, it's clear that the incantation, the amulet, is not working. So Rashi says, if it's the amulet, we have no problem if it happened to one person. We assume that the amulet, the incantation, is it. If we have a choice between saying it's mazel of the individual and the incantation or the kmeya, we're going to give it to the kmeya. But once the kmeya is knocked out of the picture, like in our case over here, kmeya is out of the picture because we know it's three different kmeyot. If that's the case, now you have to left. Now you have to come up with an answer. What's the reason it's working? Is it because of the rofe, or is it because of the mitrape? So now we have to make a decision. Who is making it work here? Is the expert, the doctor that's making it work? Or is it the chole that's giving it work? And that's the take of the Gemara over here, that we don't know which individual to assign the benefit of the doubt to. Is it the chole that he accepts amulets, or is it the doctor that can write amulets? You should know that Tosfot has a slightly different approach to the Gemara here, a nuanced approach. I put together a chart, I'll send it out later, just showing where some of the nuances are, some of those differences are in Tosfot versus Rashi. Because Rashi, which I didn't do with you, Rashi back on the Amud Aleph says some things, brings two opinions down, and those opinions are soter what he says on the Amud Bet. So there, because of that, Tosfot tries to discuss what exactly is going on with Rashi and which one makes more sense in the pshat that Rashi brings down. Alright, now the Gemara continues and says, with regards to the Kmeyot, Yibailu, Kmeyim yesh behem shum kdusha, o du mehem behem shum kdusha. Do Kmeyim have a din of kdusha? I mean that they have psukim written in them, sometimes Shem Hashem written in them. So do they have a din of kdusha? So the Gemara wants to know the Mai Hilchot. What do you want to know? What do they have a loch of kdusha for? Ilayim elau tzulinu mipnei adleika. If it's to save them from a fire on Shabbat, there's a fire in the house, are you allowed to remove them from the house, carry them out? Whether it's a chatzer, Rashi says a chatzer mu'urevet, to a chatzer that you're allowed to carry them out. Gilyan Asha says maybe it should be a chatzer she'enu mu'urevet. Depends on the Gemara later on. In the Masechta, where you're allowed to save a certain amount of items from your house when there's a fire out to the chatzer. So here you want to say you can do that. Tashma. We have it pretty straightforward further on in the Masechta. Habrachot v'akmeim. Afo pishesh b'em otiyot. Ominyot harbeh shebetara. Eim atzilin otam ipnei adleika. That if you have things that have brachot in them, or they have kmeim, they have amulets, avu pishveshim otiyot, they have letters, umanyanot arbeishu b'tara, psukim adatara, ein matzil notam ipnei abdeka, v'nisrafim b'mkoman. You don't save them, and they burn in place. They do not have that level of kedusha that you're going to go in and save them. Okay, so that can't be the reason that they have kedusha. So what is the issue that we're discussing here? Elo dinyan gniza. Do they require to be put in gniza? Tashma, we also have that. Haya katuv al yadot hakelim val karei amita. Rashi has a slightly different girsa, which is haya katuv shem. The shem Hashem was written on the yadot hakelim, on a handle of a kli, or al karei amita, the bedposts. Then, you can't just leave it there. You have to be yugot v'yigun zenu. You have to carve it out, you have to cut it out, and put it into gniza. So that can't be the question here, because it has a shem Hashem in it. The answer is yes, you have to put it into gniza. So what's the question? Are you allowed to enter into the bathroom with them on? My. Yesh behem kedusha v'asir, they have a din of kedusha and it's asur. Or dum ein behem kedusha v'shari. Maybe they have no kedusha and you can enter into the bathroom with them. Tashma. So you're not allowed to walk around on Shabbat with an amulet when it's not from an expert. If it was from the expert, nafik, you can go out. If you think a kmeya has a dinik dusha, now the same problem that we had before in the previous mar with the tefillin. What are we afraid of by the tefillin when you wear them out in public? Even according to the one who says that you're allowed to wear tefillin, our fear was that when you had to go to the bathroom, you're going to remove the tefillin and carry them to alad amot b'shut rabim. If you have a requirement to remove the kmeya because it has kedusha, then you're going to have the same problem by the kmeya, which is that you're going to remove it to go into the bathroom, then you're going to be afraid that you're going to walk dalet amot b'shut rabim with the kmeya. How can we let you wear an amulet on Shabbat, even from an expert? There's no problem. We're talking about an amulet that's not with an incantation with psukim in it, rather, an amulet that contains incense in it. So, of course, you can walk into the bathroom with that, because that doesn't have a question of dusha. Va'atanyo, didn't the bright at the end of the previous amud say, Echad kmeya shel ktav, echad kmeya shel ikarin? The halacha in our Mishnah that says that you're allowed to go out with a kmeya says, doesn't matter whether it's an incantation or incense. So that can't be the answer. Halacha ma'eskin b'chol sheish bo sakana. Someone who's in danger of life and limb. He's ill to the point where he could die from this. So he doesn't have to take it off there. It's sakanat nefashot. We're not going to make him take off the amulet to go to the bathroom. Because he might die, but he takes off the amulet. You're allowed to go into the bathroom. Vatanya, that same brayta that we just said at the bottom of the previous amud. Echad cholesh yesh bo sakana, ve'echad cholesh ein bo sakana. That wasn't a determination on whether you could wear the kameya or not. Ella, came into masi, since it's efficacious at curing its medicinal nature. Afakav denakal biyadei. Nami Shapir Dam is a huge chiddush that you can carry it around. The fact is that the reason that you're carrying it around, as we said before, is not because it's jewelry, not because it's an adornment. You're allowed to carry it around because it cures. It has curative properties. And curative properties would apply both to something that you wear, as well as something that you have in your hand. You carry it around. Umar says, wait a minute. That's not correct. You can't carry it around in your hand. You can wear it derech malbush. You can wear it like clothing, like jewelry. You cannot hold it in your hand and carry it around. Rabbi Shai is pretty clear about that. That does not work. So that cannot be the answer over here. Ella, ocho b'maya skinan b'mechupe or. It's covered in leather, in a skin. It's in a pouch. Meaning that it's not just the amulet or the writing, the cloth itself. It's encased in something. So if it's encased in something, now you have a piece around it. You can go into the bathroom with it. The Gemara says, wait a minute. Varei tefillin b'mechupe or. What about tefillin? They also have a cover on them. I mean, the parshiyot that tefillin are found inside the leather boxes. They're inside the leather boxes. You should be also able to enter the bathroom with them on. Vatanya, nichnas lebet kiseh choletz tefillin b'chuk dalel amot v'nichnas. Then a person who has tefillin on him before he enters the bathroom has to remove his tefillin 4 amot away and then go into the bathroom. So you see, you have to remove them. Hata mishum shin. There, it's because of the shin. You have tav kedusha on the outside of the tefillin. That's a problem because now you have tav kodesh on the outside of the tefillin. It's no longer covered. So now you can't go into the bathroom with the tefillin because the shin's not covered on it. Tamar Abaye, shin shel tefillin alacha l'moshe misinai. It's alacha l'moshe misinai that you must have the shin shel tefillin there. Tamar Abaye, now this next kirsa, very problematic for Tosafot. Dalet shel tefillin alacha l'moshe misinai. Tamar Abaye, yud shel tefillin alacha l'moshe misinai. The dalet and the yud of the tefillin are also alacha l'moshe misinai. Now Tosafot doesn't disagree with that, but why is the Gemara quoting that over here? To Tosafot, that has no relevance over here, whether the dalet and the yud are alacha l'moshe misinai. Because we said before that Tosavot says that the Dalet of the Kesher Tefillin and the Kesher on the Shel Yad do not make up Tav. They do not have Kedusha. That's the case. The only thing that matters here is the Shin Shel Tefillin. Look at Tosavot right away. Shin Shel Tefillin, Vlo Grasin, and Dalet Ve'yud Shel Tefillin. Says take out that Girsa. That's not right. You can't have that in the Girsa. Shin is the only thing that matters here. It's not true by the Dalet and the Yud. This is the Machloket Rashi and Tosavot. For Rashi, this is much better. Here it says, sounds like the Dalet and Yud are also Tav. Now Tosavot has strong support for his position, which is that the Gemara, in other places, wants to know, how do you know that the Tefillin have to be made from kosher animals? So the Gemara says, by klaf, I don't need to know it comes from kosher animals, because over there, it's ktav dusha, and then it has to be min amutar beficha. When it has, the ktiva has to be on something that comes from a kosher animal. So Rashi says over there, oh, ktiva comes from a kosher animal, therefore I know the ktav of the klaf, therefore I know the tefillin shel rosh, I don't know the tefillin shel yad. But then, what about the ritzuot? The Gemara asks separately about the ritzuot, and the Gemara says in the end, I need a separate puzzle for the ritzuot. According to Rashi, why do I need a separate puzzle for the ritzuot? I have a ktav on the ritzuot. Dalet and yud are on the ritzuot. If I have ktav on the ritzuot, then I would know. Oh, so very good. So the answer you have to give for Rashi, which we mentioned before when we said this back on Daf Chavchet, is that Rashi, it's not real ktav. You're forming a letter through it, but it's not that you wrote the letter on the cloth, and therefore maybe you need a separate pasuk for it. But Tosava believes that you wouldn't have needed a separate pasuk for the straps for the ritzuot if they was considered to be ktav over here. It's obviously not ktav, and that's why he erases the gears of the dalet and the yud over here. You see the difference being between the amulet, which is covered, and the tefillin, which are not covered. Again, this goes to Tosafot that we saw earlier on the daf today, which is, do you have to take off the tefillin shel yad? According to Tosafot, no, because it's mechupe or, and there's no ktav on it. Therefore, you wouldn't have to take off the tefillin shel yad, only the tefillin shel rosh. Okay, now the Gemara just continues with the last three items of the Mishnah, which is lo b'shir yon, v'lo b'gazda, v'lo b'magifayim. Not with armor, not with a helmet, and not b'magifayim with boots. Now the Gemara defines each one of them. Shir yon, what is this armor? Zarda. You see in the Masorah Tashaz, he brings down shir yon as matbeot ktanot, chainmail, and that type of armor. Gazda, what is this helmet that he's wearing? Armor av, snuatra, it's the leather cap that is worn by the soldiers. It's not necessarily the metallic helmet that we're talking about. We're even talking about the leather cap that goes underneath the insert for the metallic helmet that is worn on top. Below my magifayim, magifayim are boots. But over here, it doesn't mean boots, but it really means amarav pasmike. Pasmike in the Shas mean either slippers or socks. Over here, the translation is probably greaves, which are shin guards. Leggings, the shin guards that are worn, which are protective. They changed over time. Originally, they were really only around the shin area. They were later expanded to include not only shin, but the thigh as well. And therefore, those ones around the shin became known as the demi-greaves, half greaves. But over here, what they're probably referring to is those protective items, not the boots themselves necessarily, maybe include the boots, but the items that are worn on the area of the sock, which is on the shins, which are the protective armor, that one can't go out with these items on Shabbat. Again, you're not chayiv chatat, they are a malbush, but on the other hand, they're not appropriate for Shabbat, they're not your normal item that you should be wearing out on Shabbat. Okay, we'll stop over here.